She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you for joining me today. I want to say up front, this show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson, one of our major sponsors. They sell many of the most fuel-efficient and clean-burning cars manufactured in the world today. So I encourage you to think about fuel efficiency, think clean burning, and think Chapman if you live in the Tucson area. And no matter what, make sure you're looking for a clean burning car for your next purchase, or even better yet, start riding a bike. Okay, everybody, get ready for an amazing show. This is a first for us. Trust me on this one. If you believe in powerful signs, if you believe that certain people are called to do amazing things on our behalf, sit back and get ready to tune in to our guest, Claire Dakin, and the very, very powerful message she is about to share with us. First of all, let me ring the bell. We're having a great connection from London, England. So this is our first international call, and third time is a charm, is it not, my friend?
Let's cross all fingers.
Fingers and toes are crossed for our audience, so that you know we had technical problems because of the content, the important content, the important message that Claire has to share. We axed the show and I said, nope, we've got to find a better line. So Claire is the founder of Tree Sisters, and her message is all about planting trees, about women stepping up on behalf of Mother Earth. So do you think I like that one a lot? And about men helping us guard us on this journey and why we should care about that. It's all that. Claire, welcome to our show. Thank you so much for your tenacity and for taking the time to be with me here today. I know you have an amazing story to tell and quite a profound call to action for our listeners if they decide to get engaged. So let's start talking about your very big mission and how this all came to be. It's all about you now.
Well, do you want me to just leap in somewhere?
Leap in. Well, I think it's really great because I know a lot of the story that you had a life-changing event. You had a car crash when you were working in India. And I think that is really when the big paradigm shift began. And if it wasn't, I apologize. But I think that's a good starting point because people do have life-changing events and life-threatening events, and their path is forever changed.
Well, it's funny. It makes me think, actually, there's been three in a row. Because I started having nightmares about climate change in my early 20s, and the car crash didn't actually happen until my late 30s. So in my early 20s, I basically started to dream that there were no more clouds. And this was before anybody was talking about climate change. And I became completely cloud obsessed because my dream time was basically telling me there are going to be no more clouds. And I was walking around thinking, oh, my God, no more rain. What do we do with no more rain? Like, then what? And how's that going to happen? But actually, you know, the reality for Tree Sisters is our first planting partner in southern India, their monsoons have failed 2 years in a row. And it already blows my mind thinking about, you know, I live in England. It rains all the time. We've just had a deluge for 2 months solid. And to imagine a year without rain is one thing. To imagine 2 years without rain, it's like, I don't know how anything survives. So, you know, reality is it's coming home to roost. The big awakening for me, I mean, the car crash, I'll talk about it in detail, but right. Actually a big awakening for me was in about 2002 when I was asked on a dance workshop to play the earth in a small theater piece called The Rape of the Earth. And I was basically in a group of about six people, and we had 5 minutes to portray The Rape of the Earth. And so they dressed me in every article of clothing that we possibly had between us. So I looked like a bag lady extraordinaire, plonked me on a throne. And I sat, and I was just handing out cups of tea. And they started, you know, pulling my clothes off, yanking everything off, yanking my hair, scratching my face, like, in effect, mining me, deforesting me, polluting me, fighting over me, like seeing me not as a being that was handing out cups of tea or, you know, providing the life support machine, but actually just a lump of resource to be used in whatever way they saw fit. And at the point that I was pretty much naked except for a scarf and a sock, I was to hurl myself on the floor, utter my most blood-curdling scream, and lie there until my, you know, humans realized that they had to put me back on my throne. But life changed for me while I was lying on the floor, because I started hearing a well-known British nursery rhyme, Humpty Dumpty, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. And it just kept going round and round and round in a loop. And my body just started to go into shock because I got it. Oh my God, we don't get a second chance. You don't get a second chance. You don't put it back on a throne.
You don't put it back together again.
There's no therapy for a planet out of control. You know, when this mother goes psychotic, it's over. And suddenly, like, I got it. And they, you know, they picked me up and they put me on my throne and they dressed me again. They did a little dance and had a community moment. It was all supposed to be lovely, but I was totally traumatized. And I was sat staring at the audience who were all crying. And then right afterwards, there was this sort of present-giving thing, and somebody gave me a present, and I opened it, and it was this little book with a cloud that said, "You can change the world." And, of course, it plugged straight into my running out of clothes, running out of clouds, and it plugged straight into my, oh, my God, I desperately need to do something, but I don't know what it is.
It was a book? Is that what you said?
It was a book.
I'm listening. A book that had clouds on? It's like, you've got to be kidding. So there's,
yeah, it was a book.
There's that all working.
A cloud on the front.
Oh my gosh.
With a white cloud.
Yeah.
And it just said, "You can change the world."
Oh my God.
And I remember it had a foreword by Mikhail Gorbachev. And I sobbed and I sobbed and I sobbed and I sobbed. And I was completely out of control. And in my crying, I realized that my desperation was because I knew, and I've always known, how much I love this planet, but I was so consumed by my own smallness and my own low self-esteem that I didn't dare to believe that I could contribute anything. And the pain that I was in was sort of being confronted by the enormity of my love for the planet, which I hadn't been allowing myself to feel because I felt so impotent, and the lie of my smallness and how much that was getting in the way. And so that was the moment that I started looking, and I started looking for something to do with the feminine. Only back then I hadn't got a clue what that even meant. But I started doing all sorts of things that were more deeply environmental, getting trained. So that was my turning point. And, you know, there's that little story is on YouTube as a film, my waking up, because there's been nothing as powerful in my life as actually embodying the earth and being on the receiving end of what's going on and feeling it in my own body, you know, and that's so crucial to Tree Sisters, the helping people to actually feel it. Because if we don't feel it, you can blather onto your heart's content and tell everybody what's going on, but you can't feel it, nothing will change. So it was from there that I made the decision to start working in southern India, because I found Project Green Hands, which was this amazing agroforestry initiative that was basically looking to reforest the state of Tamil Nadu, because 12 of their major rivers had turned to dust and they were heading for major famine. And after the tsunami, they started planting trees to help the villages along the coastline deal with their grief. And the response was so enormous, it turned into this huge reforestation program, and it completely captured my imagination, because it was the first thing I'd found that was really looking at shared environmental responsibility on a huge scale, where every member of society, whether they were single mothers or policemen or the army or school children or farmers or university children, they were all growing saplings and planting and protecting these trees. And it was at the point that I had actually thought I'd nailed their social strategy, because I was quite obsessed with this project and really wanted to know how it could be done in the West. Never thought it would be anything to do with me, but I got it down to 7 points. And right then, like 3 days later, I had the car crash.
And I want to press pause for a minute because I want to go back and we'll start again at the car crash. But I'm very interested, since this is about, and we've talked about this several times, and I'm really great with it, that this show, there's mind, body, spirit, there's the planet. This is about the deeper cut of looking within and what are you saying yes to, in my opinion. Like, you are being called. I believe that. I've said in this show many times, I was being called. I really believe that, to be Mrs. Green, and I didn't know what it meant. What do you think, when you talk about seeds planted, what made you start having dreams? At what point was there a consciousness in you? Were you born with the consciousness of feeling the earth? Did it grow inside of you? And the reason I ask that, and I apologize for the long question, when you say people need to be connected, I think that's what we're looking for. Those of us that we got the connection, we feel it, we want to spread it, we want it to be contagious. What happened to you, Claire Dakin, that the connection was there? Did you just show up on the planet that way, or were there family circumstances? Can you share a little bit about going back a little bit?
I don't think I was special in any way. I certainly was always in love with nature, but I think if children are given half a chance, most of us are.
Right, right.
I can remember, you know, being so excited about geography lessons and biology lessons, and I remember a walk with my mother where I was talking about indigenous cultures, and I must have been, I don't know, 11 or 12. And I was talking about cultures that did ritual and ceremony for the earth. And I can remember feeling so embarrassed about them, in the same way that when I was in China years ago, I heard them talking about the Tibetan people and how the Tibetans needed liberating and how they were so ashamed that we were going to go and see the Tibetan people because they hadn't been liberated properly yet. And just how heartbroken I was in that situation and feeling the untruth on both sides. And I've never forgotten the moment, because I've reflected on it so many times, of thinking in my arrogance of what I had been taught as a Western mind.
Right.
That to be in harmony, so in harmony with the living world, that you would want to perform rituals, that you would want to do things that had you in connection, that there was something to respect or protect. I remember thinking, in effect, just like the Chinese, oh, they haven't been liberated yet. And, you know,
right.
So that was me at 11 or 12.
Exactly.
And now, you know, I think back on that. I look at what's happening to the world. I look at the way that the indigenous people are being forced out of the Amazon so that we can create dams. Or they're having God knows what dropped on them from above so that they can be turned to the so-called developed way, which
right.
is to abuse and trash nature. And they are ridiculed, and I remember that consciousness within myself so clearly, and I know that that is the prevailing consciousness now. You know, when I hear Chevron saying about what they've done to the people of Ecuador with their colossal oil pollution and the fact that they've been fighting this court case for over 21 years, saying, we will fight until hell freezes over, and then we will fight on the ice.
Oh, my God. And they guess what? They've got the money, so they will.
I know, but they will fight that hard.
That's for that.
For their right to trash the world and to poison
right.
the people who caretake it. That is the consciousness that we're up against. And it's terrifying. So, you know, I can look back. I definitely think that when those dreams started, and I have no idea where those dreams came from, you know, I was doing some flutterings with shamanic work back then, but nothing serious. You know, I wasn't doing any long trainings. I was just starting to build my relationship with the earth a little bit, and I was starting to sort of say hello to the four directions every morning. And, you know, I was exploring a little, and maybe I created an opening in my consciousness for these dreams to come in. But either way, the dreams came in, and that was the beginning of it, because suddenly I felt deeply in my psyche that what I loved was under threat. And as soon as what you love is under threat, your level of care and awareness shifts.
And you want to protect it.
And you want to protect it.
Yes.
So that was the beginning. And certainly that theater piece, that rocked my world. That was it. My life changed completely in that moment. And actually, more than the theater piece, it was the crying afterwards. Because in the Tree Sisters map that maybe we'll talk about later, the left leg and the right arm in the map, the left leg is intimacy, and it's the place of deep connection to earth, and in it, and it's the great wound. It's the place of grief. And if you feel that grief, it will throw you into your courage, which is the right arm, the expressive heart. And that's been my experience. Every time I have let myself cry, deeply cry, or be heartbroken on behalf of what's happened to this world, it's put me completely in touch with my love. And that then throws me into my creativity. So when my heart breaks, there's part of me that loves it, because there's nothing like a good cry. But a good cry where I really let myself feel the pain, I know that at some point I'm going to stop, and then enormous creative potential is going to start moving.
And so
I know that I will create out of it, and that's done it again and again and again and again. That's been my pathway, my tears.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I'm working on the finishing chapters of my book. I really am. I want to say that on the air so people believe me that there really is going to be a book this year. And I want to tell you this because it is so relevant to your story and so why we connected. But I was reading the chapter I had written about fracking. And it's a very upsetting chapter, and it gets me upset now. It gets me very emotional every time I read it, because when you even describe fracturing, which is, you know, injecting high pressure into the earth. They just say the earth like it's nothing, the ground. It's much easier to say the ground. And then you inject over 600 chemicals and set off explosions. I just get sick. And when I say to people and I start crying that I can feel that, they believe me. Nobody even looks at me like I'm crazy. I say, I can feel that. Every time I read that, I get physically unbalanced and I cry and I say, we are fracturing Mother Earth. Can we call her that? That's what we're doing. So I really understand. You feel it. I mean, and if we can just get more people to just close their eyes, take a deep breath and feel it, the shift will occur. The great big shift that I'm still hoping for.
Well, you know, we don't know what we're capable of. We know what we're capable
exactly.
of when we're asleep, but we don't know what we're capable of when we're awake. And, you know, one of the things that I say to people is, would you like your children to be made from dirty air, dirty water, dirty soil, and forced plants and sick animals? You know, is that what you'd like your children to be made of? And they look at me like I'm completely mad, and it's like, do you think you're not made of the rain? Do you think you're not made of the soil? Where do you think your food comes from? What are you breathing? How much of your body is made of the breath that we're breathing? You know, do you think that somehow you are indivisible from the environment? You are made from the environment. It's like people say to me, I'm not an environmentalist. And I'll say, but yeah, but you are the environment.
What? You know? That's like these fake phrases we thought up to separate people instead of we are all of the earth. Things like that. Now I'm like, really? Okay, that's good. And then I just kind of sometimes move on. We are of the earth. We are from the earth. The earth sustains us. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. So it's like, yeah, people.
That's why there's madness.
I'm not an environmentalist.
It is madness. Yeah, we can completely trash and poison our planet.
What does that
mean?
You
know, we can frack the hell out of our water supplies so that our groundwater is forever poisoned. That's a really good idea for future generations. And we say we love our children.
And kills animals and makes people sick, and it does light up. And all of that is true. And, you know, in the United States, there is an area where there's been a lot of fracking. And, of course, there were the fractivists that tried to stop it and couldn't. And now, guess what? I know it's going to shock you. They're finding high levels of contaminants in their drinking water. Really?
Oh, such a surprise.
Wow. So anyway, we are up on the first break already, and I just can't believe this. So when we come back, let's start with the car crash and working in India and what you had to do you know, what you decided about reforesting and why that was the thing that you decided to do and what has happened in the middle. We have lots more to talk about. So everybody, please stay here with me. That felt like about 30 seconds. Claire Dakin, founder of Tree Sisters. We'll be right back. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are so absolutely blessed to have Claire Dakin as our guest today. She is the founder of Tree Sisters. Her message is all about planting trees, about women stepping up on behalf of Mother Earth, and about men helping to guard us on this very important journey. And Claire, I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about it, but I do want to tell you that a lot of the guests I've had, I'd say in the past 6 months, most of them men, have talked about, and I can think one is Larry Schwieber, who's the head of the National Wildlife Federation. He waxes poetic about the importance of the role of women in this next iteration of our planet. So there are many, you know, to me, lots of very thought leaders, very highly powerful men in roles, understanding how much we need the balance back. So I just wanted to kind of affirm everything that I know you believe to be true. And women, a lot of this healing is going to have to happen with women finding their voices. So, and you found yours, kiddo, so let's talk about that. I mean, you really found yours, and I can't wait. I don't want to, like, blow the ending about how much you've already done already. So let's talk about I don't want to laugh going into the car crash, but you had these dreams and then you have the car crash. So it was like, yeah, you got a knock on the head from whoever you think that might have been. And let's go from there.
Well, I think it's a good thing to laugh about the car crash, but I would also advise people, you know, if you're in your life and you know that there is something more that you should be doing, if you can feel that there is something missing or in some way that you are not stepping up as much as you could be, and you want to know what it is, really ask life to give it to you gently.
Yes.
Like, make a conscious choice to say, you know what, I'm up for it, but deliver it to me, you know, on a nice tray with a nice bit of lace and a little card.
Little tea, and I'm listening. You don't have to have me run into a phone, a telephone pole. But in life, many times that is what happens. It takes a big knock on the head. And that's kind of why I was laughing, because I always say, if the universe or God or whatever you believe is calling and you don't listen, that voice will just speak up louder and figure out how to get your attention. And unfortunately with you, it did.
Well, you know, and looking back, I mean, I had a lot of fear, not of the car crash, but of leading anything.
Right.
I had a lot of fear. You know, I mean, I'm not a small person, you know, I'm 6'1", I'm bright blonde, you can't miss me, you know, but I'd always spent my life trying to be invisible. You know, I was just very insecure, very low self-esteem. I was pretty much a loner. I would call myself pretty socially inept back then. And I think if they hadn't walloped me and given me the message from the crash, there's not a chance I would have actually followed through. So I think for me, it wasn't that the message, I'd been ignoring it. It was just they knew that if they didn't deliver it, with, you know, like serious intensity.
And a real big boom.
Ground it. Yeah. Yeah, like ground it in every cell of my body so that I couldn't ignore it. I would have just gone, ah, yeah, sorry. Well, I tried anyway. So, yeah, so basically what happened was I nailed the social strategy for Project Green Hands, and I was going to go and deliver it at this meeting in London, and I woke up late, and it was an icy November morning, and I decided to take the shortcut to the train station, which was a really bad idea, down a very steep hill, and skidded on black ice, and was stopped by a passing tree. And as I hit the tree, which thank God it was there because I was on a hairpin on a hill, I'd have gone straight off the road. When I hit the tree, there was a blinding flash of white light inside the car, and in the light were two words, the experiment. And I'm sitting, holding my neck, realizing that I've trashed the car, which was my partner's, so I was in trouble, and looking at these two words, thinking, what's the experiment? And this voice, as if it was sitting in the car with me, this male voice said, humanity is running out of time, but it's not over yet. But it's going to take all of us rising to the challenge to get through what's coming. The single greatest threat facing humanity is fear of failure. But you can get over fear of failure by calling everything you do an experiment, because you can't fail an experiment. You can only learn. At which point, you know, even in my completely dazed state, I thought, that's cool. I get that. I like that. That works. And then I stupidly said, so what's the experiment? And back came, you have to reforest the tropics within 10 years.
Just blows me away. I mean, it just blows me away. I knew what the answer was because I talked to you before, but it's like, okay, Mother Earth called, and here's what she said. Reforest, you know, the tropics.
And if it had been given it to me on a nice little silver tray with a nice bit of lace, I still think I'd have like gone, throwed it. That was the moment that my life flashed before my eyes. It wasn't when I crashed. It was when I heard you have to reforest the tropics within 10 years, because suddenly all these things in my life lined up, like all the dots joined, you know, including why I'd just spent 3 years of my life volunteering for this project in India when I was supposed to be fundraising, but all I wanted to do was understand a social strategy.
Right.
And why I was obsessed with it. And it was like, oh my God, you are kidding. You know, and I'd spent that 3 years that I was volunteering, I had done because I was depressed. I was depressed because I was so good at what I was doing before, which was all my coaching and mentoring and group facilitation stuff. I was depressed because I knew I wasn't doing what I was here to do, but I didn't know what it was. And I was bored. And I was bored because I knew that inside me something more wanted to come, just the same as I did when I played Mother Earth and threw myself on the floor. Something more was there, but I didn't have access to it. Like, my own lid was on myself, so tightly screwed down that my soul was like banging against the lid, and I could vaguely hear it in a muffled background, but I wasn't letting myself listen. And so I'd put down all my coaching work and become a full-time volunteer and stopped earning to say to life, okay, I'm willing, I'm open, show me. And what had shown up was Green Hands. So I was already, you know, merrily following the trees. But when I heard you have to reforest the tropics within 10 years, it's like, oh God, that's why I've been doing everything. And it was like, no, you know, just no, you've so got the wrong person. You've got to be joking.
I'm too scared.
Oh, like, that's ridiculous. You know, and every, like, first of all, every excuse in the book, well, for starters, you can't reforest the tropics. That's just stupid because, you know, you can't turn bloody great dams and lakes back. You know, what are we going to do about all the palm oil? What do we do about all the forest that's turned to beef and cattle ranch? You know, there's, what about all the massive soya plantations? Like, my brain was just, first of all, it was throwing up every, sorry, no, it doesn't make sense. Sorry, no, it doesn't make sense. But at the back of my head, there's this part going, that is a genuine request from life. Life is saying, get serious. That is the sort of scale that you need to be thinking about, or it's all over. So some part of me was deeply calm and going, yeah, I get it. Okay, you're right. Fair enough. But my personality, my ego, was having this complete life flash before my eyes moment where I was looking at myself sort of critically from a sort of displaced in a car crash state.
Right.
Going, okay, so every single place that I feel inadequate or insecure, they're all going to have to go. Everywhere that I don't think I've got the ability, that's going to have to grow. And so you might as well be telling me that I basically have to turn myself into a completely different person. And part of me was screaming, no, 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 you've got to be joking, I'm not going to do it. That's going to be agony. Another part of me was going, well, aren't you fed up with being so bloody inadequate? Aren't you just bored of being small? You know, do you love this planet or not? She's asking you to do something. Are you going to do something? No, 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 I'm not. No, I'm not. And I'm having this, like, golem-like discussion in the car with myself, thinking...
That's a really bad visual. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I can't do it.
Harry Potter.
You have to do it. I can't do it. But then, of course, the brilliance. First of all, they gave me the message. Then they gave me the mission. The message was, you can't fail an experiment. You can only learn. Which, you know, 9 months later, when I finally said yes to it, because I fought, I fell into the most extraordinary depression, which was basically, I think, in that moment when I had that life flash before my eyes, like, I was illuminated, and in my illumination, what was showing up was my shadow. It
right.
was all the places where I was just addicted to my wound, and I was just safe to play it small and stay, you know, in victim consciousness. And all of that was just yanked up into the front of my consciousness and left there like, right, is that all you are? Is that what you're going to let rule you? Is that enough? And it wasn't. But I had to wade through it to the point that I finally one day tried to do something else. I tried to do a version on a theme. Oh, well, actually, now I'm missing the punchline here. I moved the car, and then I walked back home, picking up pieces of car on the way, and the voice continued, and it said, your first project is Tree Sisters.
Oh, my gosh. And you even got the name for it.
I got everything. I mean, yeah. I was given three projects, and I was given them verbatim. So, I mean, this is the thing. Tree Sisters is not my project. I mean, it's my, I would describe it as my deliverance.
Right.
I would describe it as my education. It's life's way of pulling my head out of my backside. If I can say something on radio, I apologize.
You certainly can. And I said Harry Potter by mistake, and it's really Lord of the Rings, so I have to correct that. It's like Gollum was Lord of the Rings. He was a scary creature.
So, I walked home listening to this, which isn't verbatim, but it's as close as I can give it. Your first project is Tree Sisters. You have to mobilize the women. The women are the missing piece. Feminine consciousness has been suppressed on this planet for far too long. That has precipitated in the repression of women and women's gifts and women's consciousness and the desecration of their bodies and the greater body, the womb, Earth, our mother. Neither are acceptable. Feminine consciousness is about the willingness to feel oneself as part of life. Women are welded into life through their wombs. Women are lunar beings. Your hormone cycles are part of the tides. You cannot not be part of life, directly tuned to the death and life cycles of the seasons. And I'm listening to this, and my brain's going, wow, you're right.
And like, I just had a car accident.
Yeah, this is not the sort of thing that I usually think about, you know?
Right.
And I'm listening to it, and my brain's going, yeah, 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 that makes total sense. Sorry, no, you've got the wrong person. You know, yeah, that totally makes sense. Yep, no, sorry, got the wrong person. But the voice just carried on, and it was saying, masculine consciousness is about growing and building and structuring. Feminine consciousness is about listening and allowing and emerging. Both are needed. The feminine listens, the masculine takes action. What we've had is a repression of the feminine, so we've stopped listening to the life cycles, and we've had a massive accentuation of the masculine, so we're growing and building and taking and using without any listening of the feminine to the impact on our environment, which again was like, oh God, there it is. That totally makes sense. Feminine consciousness, the consciousness that has us feel the health of the system, feel the impact of what's going on, want to create collaboration, family, communities, you know, circles. That's what women are about. We're about sharing and health giving and feeling what's needed to bring the whole system back into health.
We're the nurturers. I mean, as simple as we are the nurturers, even in this very broken, out of balance world, women are still the nurturers, and it's
that's what we're wired for.
We are wired for that. No question about it. So
you know, it's hormonal.
It's built in. It's in.
Yeah.
It's in. It's just
you can't
in
get
there.
Away from it.
And getting it out of balance is what has put us here today. And I love it. I just have to say, I love it when very powerful thought leader men come on and they totally get it like we do. It's not about bringing men down or writing them out of the equation. It's about more balance. And we're really out of balance and it's taken quite a toll. So I think it's really important that we say it's men. I see it as men, you know, holding our hands together as we walk into the fire to get through it. Because that's not how it's been. So,
well, you know, we have to acknowledge the fact that we have all inherited the consciousness that we're living in, and we've all inherited the systems as a reflection of that consciousness. There's no point saying it's your fault. It's what are we going to do about it? And one of the things that needs to happen is feminine consciousness needs to ascend to her rightful place in pure partnership. It's not about pulling the masculine down. It's about the feminine re-emerging to the extent that the value is naturally felt, and so behavior changes.
And like you said, you found your voice, and it was like, I can't play small anymore. And I think lots of women have to say that. Women and men, you have to say, no, we're all picked. None of us are special. We are all special. That's how I look at it. Every single one of us is special, and find your specialness. Now, let's talk a little bit in detail about your work. You said the voice, you're being guided to, the organization was going to be called Tree Sisters. And it was an invitation to create a world that values both women and nature as a new norm, a very big role for them. And how was that going to play out? What was that going to look like? And what does it look like? Because you're doing it.
Well, I mean, in the instructions, basically what they were saying
Which
was,
they should have emailed to you.
Wouldn't it have been simpler?
Really, you would have had that card, no deal with a partner. It's like, could you have just sent me an email, please?
I could have just put it through my letterbox with one of those
exactly.
happy pills that they took in the Matrix.
Yes, that's exactly right. All those great references to movies. Exactly. There's other ways to do this, but I think probably you wouldn't have listened as well. You might have said, oh, that must have been not for me. You
well,
needed a car crash.
It's how it's happened, so there's no going back. So, you know, at the car crash, what they were very clear about was there's a new consciousness that's needed, and that new consciousness needs to come through women. And again, that's not me dismissing the masculine, because there are so many men out there who are actually opening to the feminine consciousness, which is part of all of us. But what I really understood then was that women have been so suppressed, so suppressed. We've become whatever our cultures have needed us to be. And in doing so, we've lost an awful lot of what I would call innate feminine embodied wisdom. That wisdom that comes directly from our wombs, that wisdom that comes directly from our earth connection. Now, back then, I didn't have a clue what any of that meant, because I've had a huge journey with moving into relationship with the feminine archetype and the sacred feminine within my own life. But I got it. I got it enough to know what they were on about.
Right.
And I also got it enough to know that I was terrified of it myself, and therefore, if I was, a lot of other women would be too. But we've been suppressed, and so it's hard to even imagine just how much feminine creativity, brilliance, wisdom, intelligence has not been accessed or put to good use in this planet, because so many cultures simply have suppressed the hell out of their women. And so I understood, okay, what I'm being asked to do here is call women forth to create a global network. So they said, you need to build a global network of women to co-create a campaign that makes it
okay,
normal.
Okay, hold that thought because we have to go to a break. And I know. Right when we come back, we'll build the crescendo again. Claire Dakin from Tree Sisters, please stay here with me. You won't want to move.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
The Habit Store is a big operation with staff and volunteers working hard to reduce our carbon footprint. We sell donated building materials, furniture and appliances, and recycle the metal from items that we can't repair or sell. We even have solar panels on the roof. The good deals we offer shoppers means Tucson Habitat can build and renovate homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store's store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturdays, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And Claire, thank you for giving us lots to think about. Let's go with where we're building this big crescendo. Then we have the breaks, and it's like, I can't do anything about that. So let's pick up there and build it up right again. You're getting ready for the big denouement.
Well, the instructions were very simple. Well, I say simple. It's not been a simple journey, but build a crowdfunding campaign. Gather the women from around the world. Build a global network. Call that global network to help you co-create a campaign that helps to make it normal for everybody to start giving back rather than just taking all the time. Everybody takes and takes.
Is that going to be on day one? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm laughing. Yeah. Create a global network, do crowdfunding, and plant trees.
Yeah, just a small thing. You
and
know,
you're
but
still
while you're
here.
Walking up the road holding pieces of car, you're
right,
just listening.
Right.
You know, I was thinking, sounds like a good idea.
I'll start on that tomorrow.
Yeah, so, everybody takes all the time. Taking is normal. It's become taking our planet and our resources and our ecosystems for granted is what we've been taught to do. Now we have to be taught to take care of our ecosystems as if that is the most normal thing to do. That is feminine consciousness. That is caretaking. The women need to rise to, and they need to come together so that they can actually reconnect to feminine consciousness, reinvent themselves as women to actually tap back into what it actually means to be a woman and then bring that consciousness forward into the creation of this campaign. So, you know, again, it's like, that sounds like a really good idea. Sorry, completely got the wrong person. Haven't got a clue. Don't know what it means to be a woman. Don't like women terribly anyway.
I have a
really
headache.
Shy. Not much of a networker. Sorry, got the wrong person. But it wouldn't leave me alone. And
are all those things true? I mean, you weren't much of a networker and joiner.
I'm still not much of a networker.
Wow.
No. I mean, you know,
that's probably why you met me.
One of the reasons why I think this project came to me was because I was ill-suited on just about every level. Well, I was, and I was terrified. And, it made sense when they then said, everybody needs to give money every month to plant and protect trees. You know, if you can do that with a million people, that's like millions every month. And I got it. It made complete sense. But it was like, I fell into depression. I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. You know, I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be somebody that was that brave, but I wasn't. And I just wallowed in my inadequacies for about 9 months. It was a 9-month gestation period. And then...
Interesting. Very interesting. Everybody take note.
I know.
There you go.
All very feminine. And then push came to shove. And one day, the voice came back. And I said, okay, I'll do it. What's a tree sister? And the voice said, it's a woman who makes 5 choices. To be considerate of the earth, encouraging of her sisters, intimate with life, responsible for her caretaking, and courageous with her gifts. And it completely captured my imagination. I ran home, I drew a 5-pointed star, and I said, show me where they belong. I said, consideration in the head, encouragement in the left arm, intimacy in the left leg, responsibility in the right leg, and courage in the right arm. And I didn't think much of it for about 3 weeks. And then 3 weeks later, I went back to this map and I looked at it and I was like, holy shit, that makes sense. Like, that's like the in-breath of the heart, encouragement,
right,
our need for each other, our need for love. The in-breath of the body, intimacy, our ability to plug in through the physical to the bigger body. That's the feminine. That's on the left. Okay, that's where we receive energy. Responsibility, our ability to respond. The right leg, that's the out-breath of the body. Courage, that's the out-breath of the heart. That's the masculine on the right-hand side. And I suddenly looked at this map, and it was like, oh, my God, I've got something. There's something here. So I got 5 cushions, and I put them out on the floor, and I started standing on each of them and started listening through my body. And the Tree Sister map was born. And the Tree Sister map is probably the single most life-changing thing that I've ever been shown or given, and it equates perfectly with 5-element acupuncture. And the simplest way to describe the biggest breakthrough for me was in realizing that the left side comes first, and the left side is our ability to listen through the heart and the body to the health of the system.
Okay.
The right side of the body reflects what we then do with that. If the left side is down, if the feminine is down, if we're not listening to the heart, we're not listening through the body to the bigger body, all our actions are completely unrelated to life. That's the situation that we're in. The feminine has been down for thousands of years. The masculine has been out of control. Our actions are making no sense in relationship to our system. And suddenly I got it. That's why women. That's
okay,
why
so I have to ask you something here. Was understanding that the, like, a very critical, pivotal point, which I understand, but was there a second piece where people understand that? Because I will tell you what I think, but your understanding of it, was that the most critical part so that you knew how to go out and reach people? Or what was the incredible importance of understanding that message? Because I agree with you.
Well, before that, one of my issues was I was terrified of doing something for women. I was terrified of doing something for women.
Interesting.
Because I was afraid that I would make myself a target, and the other women that would then be afraid of being a target, because when has it ever been safe on this planet to say, you know what, we're going to celebrate women,
right,
and we're going to believe in women, and women are going to take leadership on something that's really important. And, you know, my upbringing was fairly crazy in the man-woman department, and I had an embodied sense that if you step forward as a woman and make yourself visible, you get attacked. And I didn't want to do it. But when I saw that map and I got it, and my body just said, if the feminine isn't embodied, if we don't start listening, if women don't start to remember what it means and take leadership from the heart and listen to the body, it's over.
Right.
I got it. Like, oh my God, women have got to step up or it's over. The map nailed it for me. And then all I had to do was confront the fact that I had yet more of my own crap about my own fears. But at that point, I'd already got to the stage where I'd chosen, okay, what's going to win, my fears or the work at hand?
Right.
And I decided it's going to be the work at hand. So then it's just a case of every time yet more of my, oh, I'm not worthy, or I'm afraid, or whatever else it is that's been, you know, coming up ever since I started doing this, you just deal with it. It's like it becomes an opportunity. And that's what I think is so incredible about life. Life knows us. Life knows what we're capable of, even if we are still totally steeped in our stories. Life has a bigger picture. It knows what we're capable of. It knows what we're here for. And if we trust the brilliance that comes through us in moments where we feel so connected and our life force suddenly starts to do a dance inside us before our ego goes and, you know, throws a bucket of cold water over the whole thing, those moments are the moments that make us come alive. They're like the signposts on the path that says, you know what? There is so much more to you that meets the eye. And if you take this path, it'll take you there, even if it means that you have to confront all the things that have kept you small all the way along. Do you want them anyway? You know, really? Are you bored yet? Because we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's get moving. And, you know, here's what I'm a little concerned about. We have about, I don't know, less than 10 minutes left on the air, which is, you know, it's like one of these days I really am going to say, I don't care. We're just going to keep talking until we run out of things to say. But I think it's really important while there is time in the show for you to share with people what you've done and how women can get engaged, because there is a piece to that. It's going to be a fast forward for you a little bit, but you haven't just stayed in the I have a dream stage. You're in the implementation stage. You have set it up and there is a call to action and things are already changing. So I think in the minutes we have left, you have to talk about that, because we don't want to get off the show and say, okay, we never really talked about how you can help be a part of the shift and support Tree Sisters energetically with your pledges, how to get the trees planted. And the thing that we haven't really talked about is why planting trees. I totally agree with you that that is the place to start, because without the rainforest, we are without the...
Okay,
so you go.
Okay, let me see if I can be super succinct. I'll give you an example. I was snorkeling not so long ago off one of the islands in Thailand. I was taken away for a brief holiday. And what I was confronted with absolutely broke my heart yet again. I would say 98% of the coral was dead. Now, this is some of the most famous diving and coral in the world. The coral is the fundamental ecosystem upon which the oceans thrive. When the coral is gone, our oceans are going to die.
Right.
It's going incredibly fast, and it's below the waves. You can't see it, and they're not talking about it. So trees are the carbon sinks on land. They are, and the soil. Trees basically eat carbon for breakfast, lunch, and tea. You know, they're made of carbon. They are carbon made visible. Fast-growing tropical trees are the fastest way of sequestering carbon that we have. The tropical forest belt is not just the lungs of the planet. It's also a massive conveyor belt. It's a massive rain creator. It's a profound stabilizer of our weather. As the tropical belt goes, as it is, at the rate of an area the size of a football pitch every second, we are losing our capacity to stabilize our weather, and we are losing our rain. And the carbon, because it is being lost from the forest, so deforestation massively increases carbon emissions, not to mention the fact that we are way over any level of carbon that we've seen in the last however many millions of years.
Ever. Right.
Basically means it's dissolving in the oceans. So the oceans aren't just warming because of climate change. They are also turning to acid. As they turn to acid, coral can't survive.
Right.
So we're not just dealing with major climate change. We're dealing with the possible death of our oceans. And you can look into the science of that, and all I will say about it is it is terrifying. It's a very
fast way. And it's accelerating rapidly.
It's a very fast way for our planet to die. So trees, for me, it's a lot to do with saving the tropical forest belt. It's a lot to do with stabilizing the lives of those in the developing nations who are on the coal face of climate change and are also amongst the poorest. But more importantly, it is a fundamental necessity to stop turning our oceans into a carbon sink. Now, when I talked about the map has five major areas. Consideration in the head, which is education, looking at how you educate completely differently. And
right.
For us, that is how you educate through the aperture of the feminine, how you draw women who aren't usually environmentally conscious towards something that celebrates the feminine and calls us into our gifts and then draws them towards ecology. Encouragement is how we build a global network. It's going to take all of us. I'm saying these things. This is what we have to do. I haven't got the answers.
Right.
I just know that it's going to take a global team to be able to pull it off. How we build a global network. At the moment, our primary tool is Facebook, but that's why we are building our next interactive website. Intimacy, the left foot. That is how you then help that network reconnect to their bodies and through their bodies to the natural world, so that we are plugged in, so that we are resourced, so that we are strengthened. Because right now, we are not plugged in, resourced, and strengthened. In fact, we are burnt out, to the place of responsibility, the right foot, we don't have the energy. So the first thing is bring women together and then plug them back into their deep connection to life so that they are resourced and feel strong enough to make the change. Primary change in the right foot. Every single one of us, regardless, we all give money for trees every month. It's a bottom line. If you're walking around on this planet and everything that you're doing is warming her, which basically currently everything that we are is warming her, then if you're not actively cooling her, it is gross irresponsibility.
So, and there are, the implications are really astounding. I mean, it's when you talk about the oceans, if we don't have the trees to help cool the oceans, I mean, it is all really part of the chain and that connectivity you're talking about, which starts with how you started the show, connecting yourself to all of this that's happening. And the other part, there's a fear of what you might have to do about it, but don't be afraid to, you don't all have to go out and start Tree Sisters. What is your role? What is your part? It might be as the classroom mom in your children's school and starting things on ecology. I mean, there are so many ways to say yes, to activate that part of yourself for leadership on behalf of Mother Earth.
Yeah, and this is the part. So the right leg is the responsibility in which for us, the bottom line is all of us start to give money for trees, and I'll go on to that shortly. But it also means you've got to start looking at your choices. You've got to start looking at how you consume, where you consume, why you consume.
Right.
The right arm is what you've just been talking about. The right arm of courage is the willingness to feel in your heart what wants to be done, what makes sense of you. And if you look at the map, which is on our website, it's on the front page. If you go to our homepage, you'll see on the right-hand side there's a link to the map. If you click on that, you'll see it's a pentagram, and you'll see the link between intimacy and courage, the left leg to the right arm, which is my favorite line on this map, where if you let yourself feel your grief, and this is a real part of a lot of what you can do, you need to wake up. Like, we all need to wake up. The single biggest thing you can do is actually feel your emotional response to what's happening, your emotional response to imagining the world that your children are going to inherit, or your grandchildren, because I can't even think about what they're going towards. If you can feel it, really feel it, unlock your heart and have the courage to cry, to grieve the loss of our species, to grieve the loss of our seasons, to grieve the loss of any form of being able to take safe weather for granted because it is going, then it will throw you into your courage. It'll throw you into your creativity. And as Gina says, that is whatever makes sense of your soul. So feminine leadership in Tree Sisters is about finding what you most love, what most brings you into yourself, and what most strengthens you, because it's only when you're strong and plugged in that you will do and have the energy to do what you need to do. And it can be anything. So the campaign is built around those five elements, all of which sit around the womb, which is at the center. So how do we start to live as if life matters, which is at the middle of our map,
rather than just money? 2 minutes, so you have to give the, like, we have to give the website and how people can do it. And I hate to do this to you, but it's 2 minutes of the succinct takeaway for people.
I'm doing okay here.
Okay, good.
So
if you go
to our website, which is treesisters.org, and you click on the Giving Tree, or what can I do? The Giving Tree will take you to a place where you can figure out whether you are a root or a branch or a leaf. If you're a leaf, that means you can give between $5 and $95 a month. 80% of that will go to the trees. 10% of that will go to women's empowerment. 10% of that will go to building this campaign. There are so many things on the website that you can do. This is about taking this permission, this call from Earth, and personalizing it. You can look on our Facebook page. Tree Sisters on Facebook is absolutely beautiful. Go to the film links on Facebook and look at the different films. Spread them far and wide. See who you can get involved in this. The films are glorious permission. The story of the crash is in the Women on Fire speech that you will find on our YouTube channel. The more that you can simply breathe in the invitation from Earth, recognize that women have a job to do, and feel into what that is, the more your willingness already becomes a different current of possibility
yes.
in this world.
Yes, and it's treesisters.org. Thank you, my friend, for what you're doing. We will continue to promote it. We will help grow the trees. Everybody, make it a great green week. Next week, Ocean Robbins from the Food Revolution Network. Their mission is to inform, inspire, and empower people for positive action for health. Everybody, thank you for being a part of this. Remember, connect. Women, let's hear it. Thank you, Claire Dakin.